All right, we're ready to go here. Thumbs up in the control room. Yes? Yes, this is episode 160. I'm sorry. 161. Right. Yeah, write that down. 161. Yes, levels look good. Of course, talent is always ready. Okay, let's do this thing. Three S's, star, smile, strong. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. New episode is posted every Monday for your podcasting pleasure. We have been certified by the Good Housekeeping Seal of Podcasts as binge-worthy. And if you want to binge, go to WGNplus.com. There's the entertainment prompt, and there you will then see another prompt that says Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you will find all previous 160 episodes of said podcast, which can only mean one thing. This is episode 161 in year 3 of the continuing dialogue between you and me. Hopefully you've been enjoying the dialogue up to this point and will continue to do so. So thank you so much for clicking, downloading, scrolling, whatever it is that you do on a regular basis to find this podcast. Your efforts and your loyalty is much appreciated. Today, for episode 161, we usually do a segment called the Pop Culture Club, but there was a couple of things I wanted to talk about today that would fall into the pop culture mode, and there is no one more on top of the pop culture world than the pop culture guru-ess, I guess. Is that what I call you, Emily?
Sometimes.
Like, then our regular contributor, Emily Arminetti. So welcome to the Pop Culture Club and welcome back, Emily.
Well, thank you. I feel like this is a lot to live up to now.
Yes, yes. Well, hey, I mean, I don't remember. Do you actually, have you written it down anywhere? You used to be very detail-oriented when I worked with you in the public relations world. I don't know if you still are now that you're a haggard, chaotic mom.
No. Once you have kids, all detail goes straight out the window. You're in survival mode.
Right.
Call it survival mode. There's no time for detail in survival mode. So,
but I'm just thinking now. I mean, it's got to be almost 2 years, right?
Yeah, I think 2 years, probably this summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometime. And it is summer. It's officially summer.
Yeah.
So... yeah, so 2 years, that's wild. It's gone by very quick. Hopefully it has for you, too.
Yes, very quickly.
Yeah, so we continue to have fun, and so that's why we continue to do this. So I wanted to talk about two topics today with Emily. One, we will talk about a little later in the podcast, but just as a little tease, as we say in the business, with the popularity of the rock and roll biopic. And yes, that's how you pronounce it. It's not biopic. I'm getting so tired of that. First of all, as will happen in the pop culture world or the general mainstream, all rules of grammar are thrown to the wind when something just becomes accepted. And everybody just keeps copying it. And in the internet world, that is basically the rule of thumb. So this word biopic has become coined, even though it's completely a mispronunciation and a misspelling. The term is biopic, meaning what, Emily?
Meaning it's like it's a biography.
A biography movie.
On film. Yeah,
right. A bio pic, a picture.
Yeah.
If you ever, the funny thing is, if you ever watch old programs or listen to old interviews with stars, especially movie stars, they all called movies pictures. They didn't call them films. They didn't call them movies. They said, yes, I've got a new picture coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That was the term back then, just because I guess, you know, if you think about it, most of those people were coming from a radio world.
Right.
Where there were no pictures. And so the word picture, you know, connoted visual. And so that was the term. Yeah, I have a new picture coming out. There's a new picture.
Right. It was like, you know, moving picture, right?
Right, exactly.
That was like what they...
Yeah, yeah. Moving picture, exactly. And so, and then suddenly that term seemed to fade away, and the term movie came in, and then as a more snobby world started to take over, then it became a new film.
Mm-hmm.
But picture was the real... no pun intended, R-E-E-L. No, that was the real, or the first, one of the first terms for a picture. Anyway, so biopic means a biography picture. It should be spelled, and I have been spelling it whenever I've written it, either in a story or, you know, for publication or even on my website or wherever, or, I mean, on my Facebook page. I always do it the correct way, which is bio-pic.
Right.
Because a hyphen, unless you have forgotten about your grammar school, yes, even grammar school, not even high school. You learned about the hyphen in grammar school. You should know it that long, that it is a connector of two opposite words. That's when you use a hyphen, to make one word out of two opposites. Okay? And look, I'm not even reading that from a grammatical book. I mean, that's just what I remember.
It's just in your head.
Yeah, that's right part up, of it. And
right
so,
up there in your noggin.
And biopic is exactly an example of two separate words that are connected to make a new word.
Mm-hmm.
So not only has the hyphen somehow lost its way in the spelling of biopic everywhere, but then... You've got, especially I've seen it mostly on television, you've got television anchor people who clearly, rarely ever pre-read any of their copy before they read it on the air, which to me is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so this word comes scrolling down on the teleprompter, and it's one word, and it's biopic. So they're not faulted because whoever wrote it on the teleprompter wrote it incorrectly. And so they're reading it like one word. And if you did read B-I-O-P-I-C, it would be biopic.
Well, maybe this is one of those things that they need to start using the phonetic spelling. Because as we know in broadcast, oftentimes if there's like, oh, you know, like we'll say it like a world leader's name or like a word that's kind of tricky or a country that maybe some people commonly mispronounce, they will actually use the phonetic spelling
in the
teleprompter.
Exactly.
And in the copy.
Which, once again, whenever I am especially on the radio or even now on a podcast or any kind of broadcast medium where the audience does not see the copy... You don't have to spell the word correctly.
Right.
You should spell it, just as Emily said, you should spell it phonetically. So if I'm reading it, I read it as it's pronounced. So that I'm not stumbling and that I'm not squinting my eyes or that I'm not in the midst of a sentence trying to figure out the correct pronunciation. If it's spelled phonetically with hyphens, once again, the great hyphen, in broken up phonetically, then the person just says biopic, because you have to get the word bio in there. It's a
right.
biography. It's not a bio.
A biopic.
A biopic.
It sounds like you're having an eye exam. Or
yeah,
something.
I mean, it sounds like a test that you go at the hospital. We've just done your biopic and everything's clean. I have a pain in my lower biopic. No. So please, first of all, if you're out in the world, say biopic correctly. And if you hear someone say biopic, just slap them.
Or you could just correct them.
Well, yeah, after you slap them. Because it's ridiculous. It makes no sense. You might as well say cat, because you're not describing what it is. This new biopic. And like I said, I don't blame. Well, I do blame the anchor person, because they clearly didn't read their copy before. Because if they did, they would have said to somebody, "What's a biopic?" And then someone said, "Well, it's a biopic." And then that person should be saying, "Well, then could you put a hyphen in there? Because it's two words." Anyway. Boy, how did I get on that? So the popularity of the two major rock and roll biopics right now, obviously Bohemian Rhapsody of last year, which won an Academy Award and made almost $1 billion worldwide, and now the continuing popularity, and I certainly have a soft spot in my heart for this, the Elton John biopic, Rocket Man, which continues to do well at the theaters, despite its R rating. It did get very good reviews, and it seems to be getting some really good word of mouth to stay within the top 5 and the top 10 several weeks after its release, which, as we know, in today's world, especially in the summer, movies come out to great hype and great fanfare. They usually soar to the top of the box office list, and then the next week a new round of big films come up, and all those go down or drop right out. But Rocket Man is proving to have, and get this, Emily, it's proving to have the fuel, clever,
oh boy,
to stay airborne,
oh no,
in the box office listings.
Oh my. Most importantly, it passed the Elton Jim.
Yes, it did.
It passes muster. It passes. I know that's one of your favorite expressions.
If it doesn't pass muster, what was it? If it's lost its luster, it doesn't pass muster. Yeah. Well,
passed your muster test.
Yes, it continues to keep its luster. And as I said, at the end of the day, I obviously have a bias toward it, but I think they made a very entertaining film.
You say you have a bias towards it, but I say this could have completely gone the opposite way, where this is so close to your heart. Had it not been a good film, I think you would have been super critical of it.
Oh, certainly, and I do have a few little little tweaks and things about it, but at the same time, as I said, I understand your point, but you clearly don't understand the depth of my Elton fandom. I don't think I ever could have hated this movie. I mean, just for the music alone and everything about it, and just the fact that it's putting him on such a cool level to have a movie made, and just new news, which is very exciting.
And by the way, he didn't even have to die to get it made.
No, so, exactly. You know. Still alive.
Yeah.
But just announced in the past week or so, Elton, by the time this podcast posts, he will have already received it. But he is receiving France's highest civilian honor.
Oh, really?
Yes, as for his artistic achievements. And I believe that other honorary and high minded celebrities who have also received that include Jerry Lewis.
Oh, wow. That was
well, that was always the joke.
Or whatever they say in France. Well,
yeah. Très bien.
Très bien.
But the funny, the joke was always about, Jerry Lewis always has had a very interesting popularity here in the United States. Very popular in the 50s with his partner Dean Martin, and then he made some of these movies like The Nutty Professor and Cinderfella and The Bellboy and some of these other things in the 60s, which they did always well at the box office, but critics just savaged them. And so the joke, and then he became like known mostly as being the host of the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon once a year. So the joke was, Jerry Lewis is very popular in France.
Yeah.
But now the only thing left for Elton, really, at this point, ironically, I mean, I don't know if him being a British citizen, if he can ever get the U.S. Medal of Freedom, which is given to, celebrities.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he can get that since he's not an American citizen.
Well, do they ever give it to non-Americans?
I don't know. I mean, since it's the American, you know, Medal of Freedom, I don't know if they give it to them. But he hasn't received that. But
well, you know what? His best chance is now, because I mean, Trump doesn't really follow the rules, and it's the president who awards that.
Yeah, so, if there's a time, hopefully he has at least another year and a half to get one.
Yeah, he needs to start working that.
Yeah, but he does have the Kennedy, honor.
Mm-hmm. Presidential.
Yeah, that they give out
Medal
once a year.
Of Freedom.
Yeah, he's won that, and he's won an Oscar. He's won a Tony, and he's won.
Certainly, he's won some Grammys. I'm sure.
Yeah, you know what's funny though? He did not win his first Grammy until the 1990s.
Really?
Which is crazy.
Let's see. Yeah. Did he win it for one of my favorite songs? I guess that's why they call it the blues.
Nope. Because that, of course, came out in 1983.
Did it really? I don't know why in my mind's eye it came out later.
No. In fact, he did not win one of his the first Grammy he ever won was a song that he never even performed himself. It was an instrumental that he wrote that another flautist named James Galway recorded, and that was the first Grammy he ever won. The Grammys never really embraced him during the 70s when he had his great heyday, because he was kind of viewed as a pop star, and because of all the, which they show in the movie, the idea that, you know, he was almost kind of looked at as not serious in the music world because of all the costumes and the glasses. And so it really wasn't until The Lion King where he started to. I hope we're not interrupting you doing anything, are we?
No.
Well, you're pounding over there.
Oh no! I just set a glass down.
It sounds like chopsticks and a glass that you've been playing with.
Oh well, I was having a little bit of Kung Pao chicken.
Oh okay. Well, the pow is all over the place here.
I think it's just, levels are set high.
Levels are up. I told you before. Yeah, you heard before the show. Levels are up.
Okay, all right. No more.
Moving around there. But anyway, so what's funny is he's getting this high honor in France. He's got everything but an Emmy.
Okay, so
we have
he's
to
not
get him
an EGOT then. I was going to ask you, is he an EGOT? But
yeah, an EGOT. He's got to get the EGOT, the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony. He needs the E. I don't know how he gets an E, but he needs to get an E quick.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to get an E very quickly. But anyway, what I want to talk about later, even though we've sort of talked about it to some extent here, are what other rock and roll biopics would we like to see made, or which ones do we think will get made? So we'll talk about that, because right now, as we all know, once Hollywood sees a winning formula, they jump on the bandwagon. And
jump on the bandwagon. They do it to death.
Yeah. So I'm sure that now Hollywood executives, Hollywood producers, and Hollywood writers are all going back to their old vinyl album collections and just flipping their albums and saying, here's someone. So we'll talk about that. But right now, what I want to talk about, and I think you would fall into this category. I haven't even discussed this with you.
Yeah, I have no idea what's
right. I know, which is why I love to get you a little bit on the edge.
You
here.
Like to catch me.
Yes,
by surprise.
I do. Because then I feel that you're not scripted. Because usually, as we could see, we're right now.
Oh, because we're always so prepared.
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm flipping the pages.
Right.
We're on page 17 of the script, where it says Jim goes off on Rocket Man tangent.
I like the rustling of papers sound. Like, I imagine you're just actually pressing a button that's, like, labeled rustling papers.
No, what I'm doing is going to page 17 of the prepared script.
Right, of course.
And now I'm on 18, where it says ruffle pages and continue. So here's what I'd like to say, because, and I'm going to admit right off the bat, that I am probably going to sound snobby and snooty.
Okay.
And Jimmy Crack Corn and I Don't Care.
Okay.
So I've been watching a lot of different shows, many of them scripted shows. I don't really watch a lot, any, in fact. I don't watch any reality shows, but I...
That is not true. You have admitted to watching Below Deck.
I do watch Below Deck. That. Yeah, I do. I know. Yeah, that's my...
That
deal.
Is like the bottom...
Well, it's Below Deck. It's Below reality. Deck. It's Below Deck. It is the bottom.
I could not get... Look, I just have to go... I just have to say this. I know this is not what we're talking about, but honestly, just with the... Like, given the Below Deck thing, like... I could not be more disappointed in you.
No,
if you told me that you watched The Bachelor. Maybe if you told me that you watched The Bachelor.
No,
then.
I could never do that.
So you watch a reality TV show, but you don't even watch a good one.
Well, you know what? Because I mean, you'd never know it because I don't own a boat and I don't go out on the water all that much. Although I have gone on several cruises and that's where I just love the water.
So much that you're going to watch these ding dings.
And well, I just because I really enjoy Bravo? Watching this because Below Deck is this reality show on Bravo. It's right on Bravo, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Bravo.
Yeah, even I mean not only am I sinking low, no pun intended, but then I'm watching Bravo, which is like
what I was gonna say is not only are you bottom of the barrel for reality TV, but you're bottom of the barrel for Bravo.
Right.
I mean,
well, but I just love a ship scenario, and Below Deck refers to the fact of a crew, the yachties, as they call themselves, on these elaborate yachts that people, rent out and go into these exotic locations for a weekend or maybe even a week, depending, and they're these amazing yachts, which I'm sure have to cost several hundred thousand dollars to rent, even for a couple of days, and so it's the behind the scenes of all the problems that these really difficult life shattering dramas that the yachties go through, the crew.
Well, I think I can summarize this for you. It's about the ding dings that work.
It really is. It really is.
Okay.
Oh, it's awful. My wife looks at me and goes, "What are you watching?"
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I turn off all the lights. I DVR them and then I watch all the episodes at like 2 a.m. when she's sleeping.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I got to watch Below Deck with the captain and everything else. But,
right. But so yeah. I have busted you because you do actually watch one reality.
I do watch that. But anyway, but even on Below Deck, the one that I do watch, begrudgingly to admit as I do, as well as on television, and certainly as I'm clicking the stations, you see commercials, and certainly on talk shows, I just... And I'm not trying to be sexist here, so please. Oh, right away.
Where is this going?
Oh, her radar went up. Her weather vanes just. It's just pointing that rooster on top of your head.
Yeah, it just started spinning.
But I'm just seeing on all of these shows, because many of these, especially the reality shows, they feature women characters like the Housewives of Beverly Hills, and many of the daytime talk shows all feature women hosts. And most of the time on these TV shows that I'm either watching or clicking by, it's mostly women doing this. What is with the overindulging of wine? Did wine become Kool-Aid?
Well, I don't even think that that's just on TV. It's just kind of everywhere in life.
Well, this is my point. My point is that, as we all know, life is many times either reflected or influenced by what people see on TV.
Yeah.
And so I don't know which came first, the wine or the grape here. But clearly, and I want to ask you because... I think that you might be able to shed some insight. I know that women have always, been drinking wine, mostly white.
I disagree because I only drink red.
Well, good for you.
Carry on.
Well, you know, first of all, your name is Armanetti.
And when I am out to dinner with my husband, oftentimes I always order red if I'm drinking wine. He will a lot of times have white or even rosé in the summer, and without fail, they always bring it to
you.
Us. Like they bring me the white or the
rosé, of course.
And they bring the red to my husband.
This is my point, and mm-hmm. I have to. And I'm glad you mentioned rosé.
Oh,
because I've got a major problem with that.
Yeah,
but we'll get to that.
Rosé all day.
Yeah, but we'll get to that later. So I'm just seeing now. I know for years on Modern Family, the character of Claire, played by Julie Bowden, she's always been drinking wine and always making jokes about mommy's juice and everything. And she's kind of like the, you know, at the time when the show started, she was a stay-at-home mom who just needed, you know, her daily fix of a couple of glasses of wine to get through the day.
Yeah, it's how she copes with the, you know.
And now, now this whole idea of I need my wine to cope.
Yeah.
With all my daily stresses, you know, and then, of course, we had Hoda and Kathy Lee on the Today Show at 10 in the morning.
I trace it back to Hoda and Kathy Lee.
Well, I know.
I think they're to blame.
But I would actually trace it back a little farther, and this is why I want to get your input as well. But first of all, so now all we're seeing now are women being totally dependent on wine and flouting it like it's no big deal. Like, yes, I am in the middle of altering my state of mind because I have to do that to get through my day, which to me, I'm trying to say this, and please believe me, women, I respect women so much. I don't want to see you as a group, as a gender, degenerate into men.
You're right. Me neither.
Stop it. Because
me neither.
In this movement now of female empowerment, which has been going on for at least the last, really, at least in the culture, I would say for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been obviously slowly moving, but over the last 4 or 5 years, it's been huge.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing something in the background. Is that?
Someone talking.
Wow, you have a lot of lot of stuff going on there today. Kung Pao chicken.
I lead just a busy, busy life.
Kung Pao chicken, glasses, you know, just
chopsticks moving.
Chopsticks, ambient talking in the background. Wow. Big things going on there. But anyway,
look,
please, women, stop
this. I can't
this.
Help it. There's just constant. Yeah. This is what I mean. This is how my
and
life
that's why
is.
You
this
need.
This is why women drink wine.
Yeah. Well, this is my point. You know, if you watched Mad Men when it was on, it was impossible not to notice in the corporate world, and it was true, and they certainly portrayed it on the show, that every high-powered guy on that show was drunk throughout the day. They had a little liquor cart in their office.
Mm-hmm.
They were constantly drinking by themselves. They were, if someone came in, do you want to drink? If you want to have a meeting, if your client came in. And so, and people were making comments like, oh, well, look at the way that these guys went about their day. And they were always drinking and they were drunk. And now I'm seeing women who are now, as I said, you know, raising the profile and the power and within the society is raising. And instead of, once again, showing us how it's done correctly, you are falling into the same trap. Stop drinking like fish, like the men in Mad Men used to. You don't need mother's little helper.
Women are the last bastion of civilization. I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah, but now you're losing. You're becoming us. Don't be corrupted by the power. Make the power better. Don't fall into the trappings of the power. And that's what I'm seeing women do. They're flouting this. I mean, like you said, Hoda and Kathy Lee at 10 in the morning are already drinking and getting drunk, and it's okay, and everybody's laughing about it. It's like, no, don't do that. And then now it's becoming this kind of crutch or this status symbol, and this is my question to you. Aside from Hoda and Kathy Lee, because they did it on television for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, whatever it was, but I'm going to ask you, because I know that you were involved in this, maybe you still are. Does this date back to the book club?
Well, I don't know if you can blame book clubs for this, but there,
because what happens in book club stays in book club.
I've been in a few book clubs.
I know you have.
In my time.
And I'm going to venture to say that after the third chapter of discussion, then you guys all got sloshed. With wine?
Well, no, I don't. I wouldn't say that, but but it's definitely. I think the meeting is more about catching up,
right,
over a glass of wine or two, than it is about
the book.
Like really discussing the book in depth.
Exactly, and you guys all drank wine, right?
Well, yes, but we don't. I would not say that when I go to a book club meeting, I go and I get sloshed. I actually, now that I live in Texas. We drive.
Yeah. Well, now you're drinking Jack Daniels. Chicago, you're drinking Jack Daniels instead of wine since you're in Texas. Since you're in Texas, now you're drinking a bourbon and a shot and a beer.
Well, no, the thing is, actually, unlike when I lived in Chicago or New York or London, where I'm almost everywhere I'm going, I'm taking public transportation of some description. Here, I have to drive myself to and from book clubs. So, you know, you have to,
I'm every TV show, every time I see a woman who apparently is being portrayed as being independent and powerful or empowering or having some kind of, looking as some kind of a role model, she's got a glass of white wine in her hand. And I'm sitting there going, how is this different than the Mad Men portrayal with the scotch and on the rocks, and how that was being, oh my God, these guys with their drinks. But now that the women are doing it, it's all giddy and fun. It's like, no, you're ruining this. I noticed this 20 years ago when I was in the public relations world, and that's where I first met Emily. And I would hear, because I was a little older than some of the people coming in, a lot of these.
Some of the youngins.
The youngins.
Back when we were youngins.
Yeah, back when we were all youngins. I was still a little older. And so I would hear, and we, there was a lot of interns and young women, and it's a very female-oriented kind of business. There were more females than males.
Yeah.
And so I would hear.
Well, except at the top. But
that's here we go.
Topic for
here we
day.
Go. All right. Militant feminist. No, I'm just sorry. And so I'm hearing about this and these stories, like on a Monday. Oh, what'd you guys do? Or not even on a Monday, on a Wednesday.
Yeah, book clubs are usually during the week.
Well, but I'm just saying,
especially when you're young.
Yeah, but not even book club. I'm just hearing about, in the hallways. Oh, we went out to this and we went out to that as a group and with friends or after work drinks. And I'm hearing these young women at the time, who now are 20 years older, and this is the beginning of this, and I'm hearing about how they are going out 3 or 4 or 5 times a week to bars and drinking, and you're hearing these stories. Oh, well, she was so drunk, and she was throwing up in the alley, and I'm sitting there going,
what?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember. I was not back when
I'm not saying you. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying I just got a general impression. And
no, I know.
At that
time, just young people, though. That's
I know, but at that time, I was saying to myself, women, stop acting like men. Stop. You guys, to your point, You are the last bastion of civilization.
We are.
All right. So then stop. You don't rise up the ladder by acting just as bad as those who you have been complaining about, or the example is, this is the wrong way. Don't, if you rise in power, the whole idea to for us to move forward is to not continue the bad behavior that corrupted power bred, but as you gain more power, change the system for the better. Don't continue the bad parts of it. And when I was seeing young women, I almost felt like, it's almost like, wow, they're almost trying to compete with the guys, like to be one of the guys. It's like, no, no, don't be one of the guys. Did I lose you?
Why more women are drinking more. I think, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I was saying, I don't think that that's the reason why more women are drinking and why they're drinking more. I think it is that people are drinking more to, like you said earlier, to cope with the stressors of daily life. Now, I agree with you that is problematic, for sure. But I think it's problematic for regardless of your gender. You know, anyone who's drinking to cope with their stress this is something they need to really, really explore. That said, have you heard that there's a new trend among millennials, and it's like bars that serve like non-alcoholic drinks? Because apparently millennials are drinking less than the
well, they have to
generation.
Because they're all alcoholics.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. I think they're trying to avoid.
Well, but no, that. But they because maybe, over the last 10 years, when they were from 21 to 31 or 35, I've seen millennials. I've been around them. I'm related to them, and I was shocked at how they all drink. And they just don't drink craft beer. They were drinking, you know, don't forget the whole Cosmopolitan and the Mojito and all the cool drinks of the last 10 years. Those were all brought back into the mainstream by the millennials.
But like I said, 20-somethings are drinking less. And so maybe they are now a different generation. I'm not even sure what generation comes after millennials.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They are apparently, now I don't understand this idea. Like, they're opening up bars in New York City that are like specifically for people who want to go out and be in a bar atmosphere but don't want to drink, which I sort of don't get, because I'm like, just go to a bar and order a non-alcoholic drink. What's so hard about that?
Well, I think there's a lot of peer pressure. I mean, believe me, my drink of choice is wine. Mm-hmm. And it has been for at least 30 years, if not
mm-hmm.
more.
Mm-hmm.
And I first started, you know, when you could first legally drink, and let's be honest, I mean, I started drinking before.
Yeah.
I was never a fan of beer. I never really liked beer, and especially 30-some years ago, there was no, I mean, today you've got all these different kinds of beers, these craft beers, different flavors, hibiscus and all this.
Oh, God. Yeah. My husband had a beer last week that was purple.
Yeah. I mean, so
it was
whatever.
Purple beer.
Back when I was drinking, there was one beer and then there was Heineken.
Right.
And everybody, woo, Heineken, because it had at least a little different taste.
Like there was like Michelob.
Yeah, there was Michelob, Heineken. Schlitz, Old Style.
Yeah, Schlitz.
Yeah, Old Style, Old Milwaukee, you know, Miller Lite, Budweiser, and that was it. So
yeah.
Whenever we went out, they'd say, well, what do you want? And I'm like, whatever anyone else is having, because in my view, there was just one spigot in 17 different cans.
Right.
It all tasted the same. So then when we started to go out, I would actually, and this was in the, you know, the mid to late 80s, to your point, when we would go to a bar, I was so not into beer, and I was not really into just getting, you know, crap-faced, and maybe this was, and I said, I will admit, to some extent, I'm snobby on this, but I was actually, I would get Perrier. Remember Perrier water?
Yeah,
because that was like a big thing at that time. It was the first kind of real mineral water that was available on a mainstream basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would order a Perrier. Well, of course. I mean, I got, you know, just pummeled by my friends for ordering a Perrier when we're in these bad little dive bars. You know what
I
mean?
Oh, yeah, of course.
But I didn't care. But my point is that there was, you know, if I was any less confident in myself, the peer pressure, to your point about, well, why don't you just go to a bar and order a non-alcoholic beverage, I believe, is that there is major peer pressure to go along with the group. Oh, and then you say, oh, what are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And I just say, hey, I don't care. I don't really like beer. And then when I started to break off from the main group and get a little older, then I discovered wine, and I went to Napa a couple times and really started to learn more about wine. And I joined a wine club where they sent you two different kinds of wine every month so you could try different you know, vintages and different types of wine. And that's how I got into it. But I know that it's not easy to just, you know, be your own person and go to a bar with other friends who are drinking and not order an alcoholic beverage. So to your point, I think that idea of a bar that just sells soft drinks or whatever they might sell instead of alcohol, but create a bar setting, is not a bad idea, because I think most people do succumb to the peer pressure if they're in a bar setting to order some kind of a drink.
Mm-hmm. Oh, listen, you're reminding me. Do you remember that restaurant? Did you ever eat at that restaurant, Sabatino's?
Oh, I love Sabatino's.
Well, yeah, you know it's permanently closed now,
oh,
right?
Oh, believe me, I was crying. I put a wreath
on. But, well, I wasn't, and here's why. The last time I ate there was like within a year of the closure. I went with my parents and my brother.
Yeah, it was on Irving Park Road on the northwest side. It was 10 minutes from where I grew up. I used to go there all the time.
Yeah, Sabatino's. And, you know, it's like, as you know, and probably a lot of listeners know, it is real old school.
Totally
Italian
old school.
Restaurant. I
oh,
mean,
yeah.
Nothing has changed. The menus have not changed in like 50 years.
It was an old school.
The same ladies are waiting on the tables there.
The waitresses were 90 years old. They had the bad little Christmas lights up all year. They would give you the little, your salad dressing in those silver little holders that you would, you know, that spun, that had like the four different you know, dressings, and they had creamy garlic, vinegar and oil, and French.
So the last time I was there, I was not drinking wine, so I ordered a vodka soda. But when I ordered it from our waitress, we'll call her Linda, okay?
How about Marge?
So I say to Linda,
Marge,
may I have, Marge. Marge.
Hi, doll. What do you have, doll?
May I please have a vodka soda with...
Sure, honey.
With a splash of fresh squeezed lime juice. And she looked at me and she said, what?
What?
And I said, may I have a vodka soda with a splash of fresh squeezed lime juice? And she looked at me
like
she wanted to slit my throat with the butter knife.
Yeah, she was like, do you remember in It's a Wonderful Life, Sheldon Leonard, who was that, you know, when George Bailey goes into the Back to the Future, and Nix is, we serve drinks for the guys who want to get drunk hard and fast.
Yeah.
Hey, get me, I'm giving out wings.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, this was not a good, I was not, we'll just say I forgot where I was.
Right, but still, it's like, no. So clearly, to get back to the original point, so I've just been very distressed. A, I've been groaning just to see this, because to me, I look at wine, and I'm, like I said, I'll be very honest. Maybe I'm snobby on this, but I do because I've gotten into wine in a more, as not just some casual thing just to drink a bottle of wine and get drunk, but I do enjoy the taste of wine. I do try to match it with the foods that I eat. Mm-hmm. I do have a favorite types of wine. I'm a Zinfandel guy. Now, here's another thing. White Zinfandel is not Zinfandel.
Hey, Zinfandel is a deep red wine.
White Zinfandel is Kool-Aid. It's pink, and it's made for people that don't like wine but want to have a glass of wine. And I will now segue into my rosé discussion. Rosé wine is the cool. It's the Kool-Aid of wine. If you order rosé wine, you should move over, because a giant jug of Kool-Aid is going to crash through a wall. Like the commercial.
Well, okay, but I don't drink rosé.
It's so, well, it's not, well. First of all, it's not wine. It's sugar water. It's pink sugar water.
Well, I think you have to have good rosé. Look, I know that my friends who drink rosé drink it in
because it's cool and it's the cool thing. They are not drinking wine. That's not wine. It's a spritzer. It's not wine. And I had to laugh about 5 years ago. My godson, you know, who's Mr. Hipster, you know, we went to his house and he goes, "Do you want some wine?" And I'm like, "Of course." And he goes, "Do you want red or rosé?" And I go, "Rosé?" You know, because this is right at the beginning of the of the renaissance of rosé.
Right.
And I'm like, "Rosé? Where the hell, first of all, where did you find that? I mean, that was the cheapest wine. It was Boone's Farm. It was $2 a bottle in the 70s. That's what you bought rosé wine when you were 16 and you wanted to get drunk in the alley. That's what you drank. So now all of a sudden, I'm like, how does he? So I'm like, well, no, I don't want rosé wine. I want real wine. You know, the snob in me. No question.
Yeah, but to your point about beer, wine has moved on too. And so it's evolved. I don't think rosé, and again, I don't drink rosé, but I don't think it's as bad as it once was. I think there are probably some really nice rosés out there.
Okay, in 3 years, rosé wine is going to be back to rose wine, and you'll never see it again on a menu. Okay, that's all I can tell you. The accent mark over the E will be gone, and you won't find it anywhere. That is a total fad. Just because it's, you know, as, and once again, I've been harping on this for a good 5 years. The one thing I have no problems with millennials, except that all they've been doing basically for the last 5 years is going back to the past, finding cool stuff, rebranding it, and then acting like they discovered it.
Well, it is true that the 90s are back.
Well, it's, but my point is, oh, vinyl is so cool. Okay, I had 100,000 vinyl albums. Don't tell me how cool or not cool. I don't need an instruction about vinyl albums from
somebody.
And
you still do. You still do. I saw you showing them to Dean Richards, so I know you still have them.
Yes, but my point is I have them from 1971.
Right.
And now the hipsters are going, "Oh, this is so cool." No, and I know it's cool. Don't tell me about it. Everything that, oh, so now rosé wine, because there was white wine and red wine. And so they're like, they went back to the 70s. And someone said, "Well, you know, nobody's really using this rosé wine. It used to be this cheap wine that nobody even bought. It was kind of a joke. It was Boone's Farm, and it was like Kool-Aid. But let's make it cool again, and we'll just make it our own." And that's what they did. That's all. Well, that's all they're doing is taking the past. Like I said, I'm once again, I use my godson Patrick, as I say, as my millennial meter to find out what the hell's going on. So about 2 or 3 years ago, we were out with him, and he goes, "Hey, have you ever heard of Yacht Rock?"
Oh yeah.
And I go, "What's Yacht Rock?" And he goes, "You don't know what Yacht Rock is?" And I said, "No, what is it?" So he pulls out his phone with all his songs. And he pulls out his Yacht Rock playlist. And he's playing Ambrosia and Michael McDonald and Christopher Cross and all these songs from the 1970s and 80s, which was back then was called Middle of the Road, M-O-R, or Soft Rock, like America and... what's the other? There's a million of them. Like I said, yeah. Ambrosia, Firefall, a lot of these one-hit wonders. And he goes, "Here's Yacht Rock," and he's playing these songs. And I said, "Do I know them?" "Well, of course I know. I know every word to those songs. I grew up with these songs." He goes, "What, really? You mean you've heard these?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course I did. I grew up with them. I have them all on vinyl 45s. "Oh, well, this is Yacht Rock." I said, "Well, no, it's not Yacht Rock. It's 40-year-old soft rock, which I grew up on. It's not yours. It's mine." Go get right. your own thing. But all they've done is rebranded everything from the past and tried to make it theirs. And rosé wine is right in that sweet spot. No pun intended. Because it's so sweet, I don't even know how anybody drinks a whole glass of it.
Well, I can tell you it's very big.
Rosé wine, you don't get drunk. You get a diabetic seizure from. No. If you drink too much rosé wine.
There's... Well, see, now I feel like I am going to have to wind you up and get you one of those rosé all day sweatshirts.
Oh, no way. But see, once again, the fact that there is a phrase like that is exactly my point. 20 well, years ago, I didn't say, I never heard, let's have a great day with Cabernet. Okay? There was no t-shirt.
Hey, now see, I see an opportunity here.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, that's
Cabernet
how, yeah.
all day.
I could make these up in my sleep. That's how stupid they are.
Well, somebody is making a lot of money off
well,
of them.
Hey, so, believe, hey, oh, believe why me. Not Look, you? By me being this angry old man who rebels against everything, I've made absolutely no money off of it. And right. everybody that joins the trend are all millionaires. I understand that. I've accepted my place in life here.
It's your lot in life.
Yeah, my lot in life is just to always be right, but it won't matter. And it won't generate any income. But at least I know I'm right.
Or if you can't beat them, join them.
No,
and
I can't.
You start marketing the Cabernet.
No, I can't do it. No, because I would have to take a shower every minute of the day. I couldn't do it. I couldn't face myself. If I made $1 million off a T-shirt that said "Let's have a great day with a glass of Cabernet," and think about this, that same phrase can go and rhymes with Chardonnay.
I just thought of that.
Yeah. So now I've already hit both sides. I've hit the bad Chardonnay, which most of the TV shows are all drinking. Oh, give me a glass of Chardonnay. So I'm, you know, as a wine connoisseur and a wine snob, I readily admit it. And I hate to see wine so devalued. And I hate to see women. As I said, I have the utmost respect. If I look at my life, the most influential people on my life were all women. So I put women at a very high level. And I hate to see women beginning to get more power, and instead of elevating the power and showing us the right way, they're falling into the same power-hungry traps and trappings that men corrupted the system with. So that's what's... But this whole thing, all I have to say is just watch television and count. There's a show on CBS. Thankfully, it's going off the air. I don't even know why I watch it or DVR it. It's called Life in Pieces. It's on CBS.
Who's in that?
Tom Hanks' son is in it. Colin Hanks. It's an interesting little show. Oh, they do like four little instead. In my view, the reason why this show is the concept of the show, I just think it's lazy writing. Each half hour episode is made up of four smaller little vignettes because I don't think they have enough ideas for one idea. So they give you four little vignettes, and that's why it's called Life in Pieces, because it's like four or five minute segments of this family's life. It's like Modern Family, only there's not an ongoing, you know, story throughout the episode. But there are, in this show, there's at least two female characters who are constantly drinking wine. Every scene, this one woman has a glass of white wine. And I'm screaming at the set as it's on. Then they wonder why I'm taking blood pressure medication. Yeah. Because it's like, wow, and as someone who really does enjoy wine and values it, I just think, I'm torn because, yes, it's nice to see a lot of people drinking wine, which is great for the industry. But then I also see them drinking wine just because it's the cool thing. And next week or next month or next year, they'll be on to, you know, Hawaiian punch with vodka. And then that'll be the cool thing, you know. So I have to say that I do blame book clubs.
Well, you have had to be in your bonnet about this for some time now. And
but I'm glad to hear
you also had a bee in your bonnet about book clubs. So I'm not surprised.
But I am glad to hear. And of course, first of all, I'm glad to hear that you drink red wine. Mm-hmm. But first of all, you're Italian, so you should.
Yeah.
And B, your family has a history in the spirits industry.
Yes, they do.
So, I mean, especially locally here in Chicago, people know the name Armanetti's. If you were an alcoholic, you definitely knew the name of Armanetti's.
Well, I can tell you, actually, a lot of people on the Armanetti side of my family were not big drinkers.
Oh, no, I'm not saying you guys were.
That should tell you something right there.
No, I'm not saying you were. I'm just saying people that...
No, I know, but I'm saying I believe that for everything they saw in all those years in the industry, I think it was a deterrent. For many of my
extended
family members who were working for Armanetti's. So.
Well, that's true because my mom, her father, when this is in the early 20s and on, her father was an entrepreneur and he owned different businesses, grocery stores, and then he also owned some taverns. Mm-hmm. And so she, to your point, she saw firsthand. She never worked in the tavern because she was too young. But her mom uh-huh. and her dad used to work in the tavern, and she would see, what was going on in some of these people. And so, to your point, she became a teetotaler. She did uh-huh. not drink.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, she did not drink at all because she just was like she saw the ravages. And my grandfather, I never met him. He passed away before I was alive. But he did not drink, and neither did my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I didn't hear too much, but I believe that my mom's brother may have had a drinking problem.
Oh, okay.
And he passed away before I was born, too, a very young guy. And I think it may have even been drinking related. So once again, you find the, people either get caught up in that scene and to their detriment, or they see it, and as you're saying, within your family, at least some of the members of my family, they saw it and used it as an example of what not to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's my only fear is that, now with the legalization of marijuana and the legalization of gambling now and sports gambling, I mean, we don't have many more vices left.
Oh, right.
Everything that was taboo for the last 40 or 50 years or 100 years between alcohol, we had prohibition, obviously. Gambling was always, something that was either just in Vegas or in little select spots. Now that's just rampant everywhere. Marijuana, of course, was the huge taboo. Now that's sweeping the country. Sadly, I don't know if this is going to be, there's only one vice left. I don't know.
Now you're making me think book clubs are going to become even more problematic now that weed is legal.
No kidding. There's no, right now. Yeah. Now no book club, there'll be no wine. It'll just be a bunch of bongs. Oh, it'll be weed club.
A bunch of middle-aged moms.
Yeah. Just all getting high.
Passing the ones.
Yeah, passing
around.
The bad joint.
Passing the joint.
Yeah, with their roach clip, with their designer roach clips. But my fear is, and not fear, but I'm just wondering, and because in many states, at least in Nevada, I'm just wondering, is the last vice prostitution? Could that be legalized too?
There's always going to be something. Are you kidding?
Well, I know, but my point is, to the same argument that you would put about pot. At least if you legalized prostitution, it would be safer. It would be more health safe for the people that are.
Well, it would probably be regulated.
It would be right. Yeah. So there'd be regulation. Yeah. So there would be more testing. At this point, we are in the last 20 or 30 years, every vice that was taboo in our society, we have said it's not taboo anymore. So. Prostitution to me is the next one to go. And once again, you might say, oh my gosh, that's terrible. But as you just said, first of all, people are doing it and they've been doing it since the beginning of time. And it might actually help with regulation in terms of making it a safer situation for both the sex worker as well as the client in terms of safety and health and regulation and medical and testing and obviously revenue. And I mean, it's so funny, but all these underground subculture things, as I said, that used to be called vices, are now legal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. But yeah.
But even some legal things are falling out of favor, because look at what happened to smoking. You know, that's very, very taboo now, even though it is legal.
Oh yeah, but
it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable anymore in a way that it was, you know.
Well, and I think
40 years ago.
Well, certainly, because the health risks, and I think unfortunately, as I've noted, what we were doing more today that we didn't used to do in the past is we used to actually, before something was deemed legal and okay in quotes by experts for mass consumption by the mainstream of society, we would test it and have some sort of an idea of the harm. But clearly, tobacco had been a part of people's lifestyles for centuries. And so it just became something that was there. And so the cancer and the other effects that it had were slow to catch up. But there was a time when we certainly knew the dangers of smoking, and yet they were hidden or certainly not promoted.
Yeah.
But I'm just fearing that because marijuana has gone from a subculture to the culture, there were no real substantive long-term studies on marijuana because it was just this underground drug. But now that it's becoming a mainstream drug, sadly, I think we're going to have to wind up seeing the effects it has on people and then learning if it's good or bad in the next 30 or 40 years, as opposed to already knowing.
Yeah, well, so you guys are having. So, what is happening in Illinois right now? Is it legal now, or is it just decriminalized?
January 1st. Oh, yeah, the law has been passed, and so starting January 1st, it will be legal for recreational. It has been legal for medical purposes, mm-hmm. but come January 1st, both sports betting on a wide scale, mm-hmm. as well as recreational use for marijuana, January 1st, 2020.
Meaning you can buy it, you can sell it, you can have it on you, you can
right.
all of that stuff.
Yeah, and you, I mean, you can. You're supposed to. It won't happen, but you have to smoke it indoors. You have to smoke it in your house. You can't be on the. You know, you can't
just be like walking down Michigan.
Yeah,
Avenue
yeah. You can't be taking a noon pot break.
Just blazing up a doobie.
Yeah, instead of people like outside of office buildings during a smoke break at 10 o'clock. Now everybody's going to be high by 11 o'clock. You know, I don't know if that's the. But I said I just came back from Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
seeing Elton, and once again, I was there 2 years ago, and once again, there's just a constant smell of pot everywhere, and that I think people are going to have to get used to walking around.
It's like pot and hash. They yeah. smoke a lot of hash there. But you know, what I don't like about, because I have spent a lot of time in Amsterdam over the last, 6 or 7 years, because I worked for a Dutch-based organization and our headquarters were in Amsterdam. The thing, that's not my thing, like smoking hash, and so it's just not my
right.
thing.
It's not mine
so
either.
The problem is, though, if I would go out with my colleagues
right.
and people want, and usually, honestly, it was never the Dutch colleagues that wanted to go
right.
to like the cafes.
Right.
It's always
right.
the people right. who are in from other countries.
Of course, because it's a forbidden fruit.
Yeah, but the thing that's annoying about it to me, as someone who has no interest in smoking hash or weed while we're out, but I would like to have a glass of wine or a cocktail, you can't, they don't serve alcohol
no.
in hash bars.
No, it's just,
so,
yeah, the word
just,
cafe
yeah.
is all pot.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're in a group of people who are going out, and this is like what we've decided to do, is like, oh, after dinner, we'll go to a cafe,
right.
And then, cafe, I'll say in quotes, And then you get, like, I forgot about that. And then I would get really annoyed, like, oh, why did I agree to this plan? Because really, I just want to have a drink.
Right.
I don't want to partake.
I said, peer pressure when you're in a group is a very difficult thing.
Well, in this case, though, I didn't, I mean, nothing's going to, just because
no,
I'm
just saying, but
the
group,
I'm going to suddenly
but you
decide,
went
al- oh,
my point
okay,
is,
I'll-
you went along with the group. You still went to the place.
Well, I went to the place. I just didn't have any.
But you could have said, you know what? I'm going home because I don't want to go there.
Well, that's true. But for me, it was more like I would rather just go to a bar and all of us have a drink together than.
I understand that. But my point is, you still went with the group. To a place you didn't want to go to.
Yeah, but then
in order to
after
be with
about
the
an hour, I was like, all right, people, we're going to a real bar and having a drink.
And they're
so
like,
let's.
Yeah, whatever, man.
Move them out.
Whatever. Well, sure, back then you can get them to go anywhere because they're all high and loose.
Yeah.
So then that was easy to herd them out of there.
Yeah.
No problem. Well, as usual, our plans. Our eyes were bigger than our stomachs.
As always.
Yeah, because we did not get to one of the main topics.
The topic
of the day. But I'm glad we talked about this. I don't know if we settled anything, but I'm certainly glad that I threw this out.
Oh, we never do,
no.
But that's okay.
But the whole idea is to throw this out onto the table for you, the listener, to observe and come up with your own idea and steal some of our own opinions if you need to when you're out with others, but just to be aware of something that that at least I have observed happening in the pop culture world. And we will see, as I said, how long the wine, I don't even know what it is, a dalliance at this point, I don't know, but right now there is a big deal with wine. But I have
to. It's an obsession. I don't think it's.
No. Yeah. I mean,
I think you think it's an. Obsession.
Yeah. But I would still put it in quotes because, as I said, I don't even know half the things that people are drinking today. I don't believe are really wine. If you invite me over, this used to be my joke because I would say, "Yeah, I like Zinfandel." Well, a Zinfandel is a red wine. It's a red deep body. Well, I'm just not. There's nothing to be with me. That's what it is. It's not a question. It's not a comment. It's not a choice. That's what Zinfandel is. But sadly, in the world of wines, winemakers, in order to appeal to less, sophisticated wine drinkers who just wanted something that was light and easy, they created this offshoot many years ago called Pink Zinfandel, which was this pale comparison. This rosé of Zinfandels that is not even a wine, it's Kool-Aid. And so I would say, oh, yeah, well, if you're going to buy some wine, you know, buy a bottle of Zinfandel. And then I'd come over, and then there was this Kool-Aid. And my joke would always be, I want wine, not Kool-Aid. Well, now, with the rise of rosé, that joke doesn't work anymore. Because that's what everybody's drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I understand. I am my voice is so far deep in the forest on this. I understand.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, it's always. I'm always like, stop drinking rosé wine. And they're like, I hear something. I don't know what it is, and it's not even worth listening to. I get it. I'm not, believe me, if there ever came a time when we got together with you and your husband, and he ordered a glass of rosé wine, I certainly wouldn't, you know, make a comment out loud. I mean, my head would be spinning, but I would never outwardly, you know, show my distaste and contempt for that.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I can get you out to Austin.
We definitely have to do that.
Huh?
We definitely have to do that. I want to do that.
Yeah. Well, there's a nice Segacio Zinfandel that I like to have.
Oh, that's my
good
favorite.
Good price point. It's really mellow and
the
nice.
Segacio,
so
that's my favorite Zinfandel.
If I can get you out here, you will have your Zinfandel.
My Segacio Zinfandel. I have that in my basement right now.
That's good stuff, right?
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's not crazily priced either, like you said.
Yeah.
No, and I also like a nice Sangiovese, which is an Italian wine. But Anyway, well, so once again, we will talk about the biopic biopics next week. But I'm glad we had this wine discussion because first, at the very least, once again, I'm happy that people are buying wine. It's good for the industry. And I'm certainly, like I said, I'm a wine snob. Oh, here's the best part. Let me just, I'll end on this story. So I'm doing a play right now. And as luck would have it, my character is kind of like a shifty convict who is like a con man. And but he knows wine, right? So I have this little monologue where I'm actually going, I'm tasting a wine. And okay. So he says, oh, the color is perfect. The bouquet is exquisite. And he takes a sip. And the way I'm playing it, he actually guesses the year of the vintage, you know. Uh-huh. And so we're in rehearsals and I'm just pretending this. I don't have a glass of wine in my hand, but when I do the color is perfect, I hold it up to the light. And then when I say bouquet is exquisite, I put the glass under my nose.
Sure.
So there's a girl / woman. I don't want to be sexist here. she's going to be a freshman in college. And she's helping the director out. She's basically helping us with lines. So she reads while we're going through rehearsal. She is on the script. And then if we don't know a line, we call for a line and she reads it. So she goes along with us. So I do this whole little shtickle with the wine thing. And in the middle, when I'm done, she pipes up and she says, you really shouldn't be putting that wine under your nose. Bouquet has nothing to do with the smell of wine.
Really?
So wait. Yeah. So she says this, very confidently and very knowingly. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't want to make a big deal in front of the whole group here.
Right.
I know for an unmitigated fact what bouquet of the wine is. Mm-hmm. It is indeed the aroma of the wine. But I'm not going to make a point of it. 10 years ago, I would have, but I've learned. I've evolved, if you will. So I just let it pass, and no one says anything, but a lot of people knew exactly that she was wrong, but nobody wanted to just do the thing either. So the next day, before rehearsal starts, I said, so you were saying that bouquet is not the smell of the wine? I said, I believe it is. She goes, no, it isn't.
Right, because if it's not that, what is it?
Well, then? No, it isn't. No, it isn't. I said, well, you better look it up, because I really believe it is. I said, I've been drinking wine, and I'm kind of into wine for many years. So she goes on her internet device,
mm-hmm, of course,
and looks up bouquet, and she goes, oh, it is. It is. Well, I know nothing about wine. And I'm like, what the hell was that? And then,
how utterly bizarre.
Yeah, and so then I'm looking at the director like, okay. And he goes, well, I know nothing about wine. I said, well, I do. And I know what bouquet means. And so I just wanted to make sure we were settled on that, because I think I have to smell it in order for that line to make any sense.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page of what bouquet means. And so this is my point. And she goes, oh, I saw a video, and so I guess I misunderstood. But she certainly, when she made this comment in front of everybody and sort of pointed me out that you are so wrong for doing this, I was like, okay. And this is the one thing that bothers me about this, is that with the popularity of wine, I believe we're going to have a lot of fake experts now.
Oh, sure.
Who know a little bit and just enough to be dangerous and ignorant.
Yes.
And so that's a thing that bothers me too, is I like having my wine and I like my little world with it. And as much as it's great that a lot of people are into it and also, experiencing the whole thing about it and liking wine, which is great. But the snob in me says, You know, I don't want to be a club in which anybody would have me as a member.
You know, right.
Please stay out of my club.
Well, this is why I always say, I don't know the old, I don't know anything about wine. I just know that I like it.
Exactly. There you
That's
go.
That's it.
Yeah. Because there are those, and I'm not overly snobby, but I do know, you know, some of the key things. I have gone, as anybody knows me, if when I like something, I'm all in. And so if I liked wine, then I had to really understand it and know things about it. But I, you know, that just bugged the heck out of me just because I was like, you know, first of all, she made me look like I was an idiot.
Yeah.
And then secondly, when I called her on it, well, I don't know anything. Well, then what are you opening your mouth for?
Right.
So regardless, that's my point, is I fear that the popularity of wine will also bring in a lot of, you know, ignorance or a lot of people that are pretending.
Pretenders.
Yeah, yes. A lot of posers, a lot of wine posers, which that's why I'm looking forward to about 2 or 3 years ago when wine becomes less popular and goes away and, you know, the next new cool drink. Because now craft beers are actually suffering.
Really?
Yeah, they're not as popular as they were before. So actually, they're starting to move away from that too. So we'll see what the next cool alcoholic, you know, drink will be. But we'll
I just see. Told you the next cool alcoholic drink is non-alcoholic.
Right? Exactly. There you go. Right.
That's the new trend, buddy.
Okay. Well, I'm going to buy stock in High C.
Yeah, you go for it.
Remember High C and Hawaiian Punch?
Of course.
Yeah. Do they still make Hawaiian Punch?
I mean, yeah, I think they do.
Do they?
I've definitely bought those little packets.
Oh, do they come? Is that what they come in now? Like those the bad little Sun Capri things, like the little boxes or bags?
No, just the little packets with the powder in it.
But remember, Hawaiian Punch. You should. I wonder. By the time you were Hawaiian Punch used to come in the back in the, when I was a little kid in these big aluminum like coffee cans.
Oh yeah.
And you had to actually when you opened it, you had to take your can opener and put a hole on each side.
Yeah.
For some reason, it made it.
But now everything's in like the little packet. They do everything in like single serving size packets.
Yeah. Too, or plastic.
Like. Now you can just pour it in. They'll do a single serving. You pour it into like a water bottle.
Oh, and then
like
just
you know
shake
those plastic water bottle individual servings. Shake it up.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I just remember my Hawaiian Punch. It used to actually. I remember it tasting metallic because of the bad, you know. Metal.
Oh, yeah, because of the tin. Yeah,
the bad tin thing that used to come in. Well, anyway, I don't know if we've I don't think we've determined or settled anything.
No, we never do.
But we never do, but it's always fun to talk about it. So, Emily, I want to say thank you so much for being honest about your alcohol problem.
Oh boy.
And we will talk to you next time. And I promise we will talk about biopics.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
Okay. Take it easy. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Thank you for tuning in to episode 161. Your loyalty and your downloading, your clicking and your scrolling is much appreciated. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Bottoms up.